You are listening to KLRN Radio, where liberty and reason still reign.
Most writers and radio show hosts know that to connect with your fans, you need to do more than just write books or record the latest podcasts. There are many different elements that go into forming an online platform, but there are also many hidden traps. To make matters worse, solid advice on how to survive the muddy waters is scarce. In the book Hidden Traps, I talk about some of the important issues of working with an online platform, highlighting traps that could put your physical or internet security at risk or be harmful to your reputation. Are your social media posts just links with a few disjointed words making you look like someone who can't complete a sentence? Did your new website cost you more than you anticipated? Are you leaking your personal contact details across the web without even knowing it? Then you need Hidden Traps. Hidden Traps is now available in paperback and ebook from a variety of retailers, including Amazon, Barnes & Noble, and Kobo. Visit blackwolfpublications.com for more details.
If you're 85 or younger, would you like peace of mind and comfort for your family? We're Final Expense Direct with an urgent message for you. The average funeral today costs over $8,000, but the most you'll get from government benefits is $255. How will your family pay the difference? We can help. Our senior plans start as low as just a dollar a day and pay up to $30,000 for a funeral and other final expenses. Peace of mind is easy. There's no medical exam. You'll have lifetime coverage, and your plan can't be canceled as long as you pay your premiums. Call now for free information about our senior plans. Answer a few simple questions and receive approval right on the phone. Plus, call right now, and we'll give you a discount prescription card for free. Call 800-553-8687. That's 800-553-8687. Again, 800-553-8687.
KLRN Radio has advertising rates available. We have rates to fit almost any budget. Contact us at advertising@klrnradio.com.
Everyone loves liberty. Our rights come from God, not the government. So why are you letting other people tell you what's best for your health care? Exercise your freedom with Liberty HealthShare. Liberty HealthShare is a community of people who voluntarily share one another's medical costs. Liberty HealthShare is founded on the idea that most people truly want to help one another. Healthcare sharing allows members to do just that as a true community that supports one another in times of need. Liberty believes people should make decisions for themselves and their families. Members are able to take back the freedom to make their own decisions about their health care. Freedom from guilt or doubt about how your money is used. You have the freedom to direct your health care, not to be dictated to by bureaucrats. Stop letting others tell you what to do and join a community of like-minded people. Exercise your freedom. Join Liberty HealthShare and take back the control of your health care while helping those around you. Call Liberty at 855-58-LIBERTY. Again, that's 855-58-LIBERTY for more information, or you can check them out at libertyhealthshare.org. Again, that's libertyhealthshare.org.
My son was in the Army back during Desert Storm, but even then he wanted an MBA. He looked at a dozen schools, but only one offered the online education and flexibility he needed while he was in a tent in Iraq, Grantham University. Turns out that Grantham's been delivering affordable, relevant college and advanced degrees for over 65 years. Heck, if they can deliver a quality education to a soldier in a tent overseas, think about the flexibility Grantham can offer you so you can earn your degree too. It doesn't matter how complicated or full your life is, if getting a degree is on your bucket list, you'll want to do what my son did. You'll want to call Grantham. Find out how easy it is to get started on your education so you can check that college degree off your bucket list. Call Grantham right now. 800-910-1370. That's 800-910-1370. Flexible, affordable, relevant. Call 800-910-1370.
At St. Jude, a family never sees a bill at all. It's like the world has been lifted off of your shoulders.
St. Jude Children's Research Hospital, finding cures, saving children. Learn more at stjude.org.
Sometimes writers feel lost, unsure why a passage may not be working. takes another set of eyes to help us nurture our writing into full maturity. At Black Wolf Editorial Services, we strive to enable writers to develop and grow, offering manuscript critiques and line edits through a mentoring editorial style. We also offer assistance on generating a writer's bio for your websites. Black Wolf Editorial Services, nurturing your writing into maturity. For a full list of services, visit blackwolfeditorial.com.
You're listening to the Spark Radio Network, internet radio like you've never heard before. Innovation, creativity, and imagination are all said to begin with a spark. So fasten your seatbelt and take the ride of your life and listen for the spark.
Sometimes we need to slow down and remember the simple pleasures in life. Good coffee, good books, and good company. Come on in. Take a seat. The coffee's just been brewed. Let's see who we have in the coffee shop today.
And I'm looking for the book on the table. Every author knows that's the signal here in Jesse's coffee shop. And there's a book. I spotted one. And the title on the book is called A Sharp Solitude. And the author's name is Christine Carbo. How you doing today, Christine?
I'm doing well. How are you? Thanks for having me on.
Oh, I'm doing fantabulous. Outstanding day in the coffee shop.
Yay.
So you've got to tell me a little bit about A Sharp Solitude.
Okay, well, A Sharp Solitude is the fourth book in an ensemble series that takes place in and around Glacier National Park in northwest Montana, which is where I live. I live in a little town called Whitefish, not too far from Glacier. And I call it an ensemble series because it's not just one character that threads all the way through, that I follow. It's like kind of pluck different characters out and they become the main protagonists in the next books. So this fourth book features a side character that was actually in the third book, which was called The Weight of Night, that came out last June. And so this book features her. Her name is Allie Page, and she's actually an FBI agent who works for one of the resident agencies, the local agency here in my hometown, or near my hometown in another town called Kalispell, in the valley that I live in, which is called the Flathead Valley. And so she kind of gets drawn into this case that really isn't hers. And she's kind of snoops around on the edges where she doesn't belong to help out the ex-boyfriend. She wasn't married to him, but she actually had a child with him. And he becomes the main suspect in this crime. And she gets involved and becomes kind of in a precarious situation, not wanting to cross professional boundaries, but really wanting her daughter not to have a father who ends up in jail, because she actually has a backstory where her father was in jail and she kind of does not want to repeat that for her own daughter. So kind of becomes interesting that way. And I cover both her point of view and the father's point of view. And he's kind of a not like an off the grid kind of guy, but a little bit that way. He very much is a loner, likes to be out in the woods, out in the wild. And his job actually is that he has this dog that is a trained canine to a research canine for a program out of the University of Montana, where they study the wild animals by having these dogs sniff out their scat. And so the dog basically finds the scat of whatever species they get trained in that species, and they find that, and they're able to discover all sorts of things about certain animals by studying just their scat, because they get the DNA and they get all sorts of hormone levels and stress levels and different things from that information. So I kind of have fun with that, with him being in the wild, but there's this whole FBI dynamic and family dynamic going on. I like to think of it as domestic suspense meets police procedural meets the wild in this particular book. They're not all that way, but this one is.
It sounds fantastic. I mean, it sounds like you've got a little bit of, the wild meeting big police chaos. So
exactly. And I love to play around with that element. All my books have done that. They've all kind of nudged up to, what is crime when it nudges up to wild spaces, wild places that, you know, and how does that look when you have these ecosystems where there's their own kind of, they follow their own animalistic rules and wild rules. And then you have people following social norms, rules of law, but a very animalistic side to crime as well with human beings. So I like to explore those themes a little.
Yeah, because I'm sure the wildlife doesn't know not to disturb the evidence.
There's that. That comes into play hugely in my first book, which was called The Wild Inside, that features a detective, a special agent actually from the Department of the Interior, a series 1811, which is something I just researched and really didn't know very much about, but he was based in Denver and he comes up to investigate a pretty serious crime that takes place. And Glacier, however, is the last place he wants to be because when he was 14, he witnessed his father get mauled and killed by a grizzly bear while camping there one night. So he's kind of haunted by Glacier. And this case that he comes to investigate, involves a guy who's been tied to a tree, kind of duct taped to a tree, yet a bear is mauled on him after he's passed away. So the evidence is really tampered with on that one.
So you make the setting almost a character in and of itself.
I do, and I get that comment a lot from my fan base, from readers, that the setting really feels like the continuing character in these books.
That's awesome. And so now one thing I want to clear up for the listeners, you mentioned that this dog is trained to track scat of a certain animal. And that's another way of saying poop, right?
Correct. Yeah.
Cool.
And it can be, a dog can be trained in like a number of different species. And again, this is research that I've done. No, I haven't done any personal work in that at all. But it's really funny because they can be trained from like bats to elk to wolves to wolverines to pine martens, that kind of thing. So they can be trained in a number, and one dog can do all of those, but they just have to kind of get reacquainted with the one that's being worked on at the time. So and there's ways of reinforcing that. Probably just like a drug dog, you know, or a dog that's trying to find a certain kind of cancer or a certain drug or a bomb.
Sounds amazing. Now, sounds like you had to do a lot of research for your books.
I do a little bit of research for each book, depending on what I kind of end up wanting to explore. And, I kind of come across ideas by just the way a lot of authors do something. I read something somewhere just in passing and it sticks with me and my mind keeps going back to it and hooking on to that. And then I really realize, oh, I think I might have something I need to explore further. And then I end up researching that topic, but I don't want to over research something because that can also be, it can be a little bit heavy when you start to write, if you know too much, and then you tend to not use the element of surprise as much. The research is great, but if you know too much, that can be a little bit of a detriment. So you don't want to go down the rabbit hole with research. And then of course you want to have time to write. And in all of our busy lives, if you don't leave the time to write and you're just constantly researching, it becomes just another tool to procrastinate.
Was there one thing that you were looking for, one little detail you were trying to research for that authentic feel that was just a challenge to find for A Sharp Solitude?
You know, I think the biggest challenge for me was actually writing my main character in terms of, because my main character is really the FBI agent, and even though I switched back and forth between her and Reeve is her ex's name, she's more central. I start with her, finish with her, and she's the central character. So I have no background in law enforcement, and with all my books, I've had to really kind of utilize local help in terms of, you know, what especially in Glacier, you know, what do rangers do? What do rangers who are trained in law enforcement do? The ones that have higher certifications in order to do the law enforcement. And in my books, I've actually created a fictional park police unit so that just because I like that for the conflict to have different factions between the park police unit and the rangers. And then, of course, there's the county sheriff because part of the park is on part of Flathead County. And the other part is on the east of the divide, which is in a different county altogether. So whatever place a crime might take place in and around Glacier Park, the law enforcement for the county gets involved, as well as the feds, as well as sometimes the local police in the nearest town. So you have sometimes three different factions, and then sometimes the FBI gets involved as well as the, you know, can get involved as well as the Interior Department, and sometimes just the FBI and not the Interior Department. So it just all depends. There was an actual crime not too long ago where a woman was married maybe, I think, 6 days to her husband, and then she pushed him off a cliff up near a place that I actually wrote about in one of my former books before that happened. And she and the FBI got heavily involved in that. And I think it was featured in People magazine and stuff. It was kind of a national story. I don't know if you remember it, but anyway, so that exploring the different law enforcement stuff is really interesting, but I find that it's hard for me because I don't have that background. And so I always have to kind of learn what it would be like. And in this case, I had an ex FBI agent out in Portland who was of great help to me. And we would have long conversations on the phone about like, what does an FBI agent in a resident agency do? And, you know, how does it all work with them reporting to their field office in Salt Lake City for this area? And you know, how do all those dynamics interrelate? You know, what kind of a vehicle do they drive? And what do they do if they have a kid? You know, can you drive your kid in the actual FBI vehicle if you need to go to work and drop them at school? And, you know, just questions. Yet again, you don't want to get too bogged down in all those details because it starts getting really, oh, wow, this person's really trying to put in a lot of FBI stuff. Like, it becomes obvious. So again, you have to, it's nice to do your research and know it, but then kind of back off from it and not use everything that you find or too much of what you find.
Well, I've often heard it said that the book that gets published is the top 10% of the iceberg of the writing and research the author had to do. So you've got
exactly.
to make sure that while you may know a lot more, you're not writing an FBI procedural.
Correct. And I think actually Hemingway had that quote that, yeah, that the writer should know just the tip of the iceberg and the rest should be kind of already figured out. That's what you give your reader. Now, I mean, we could debate that, but anyway.
say editing is slaying your darlings. Was there one thing you had to take out of this book to make it work that you were just in love with? A character, a scene? Was there something you had to take out?
There wasn't like a whole scene that I had to take out, but I have to tell you, in all four of my books so far, because my character is like, as you pointed out, because my setting is like a character, I definitely can go on a little bit with my description sometimes. And then my editor is like, okay, enough of this. Take this out. And I'm like, really? Oh my God, I described that so beautifully, but I have to take it out and I have to kill those gems, those darlings where I think I've just been so poetic of my description of something. And then I basically have to slay it and get rid of it. So that's, I think, very characteristic for me. And I don't mind doing it because I realize it just makes for a better read. Yeah, I mean, you don't want to get bogged down in too much description, but some readers love a little bit of that, but not too much of that. And so it's always a dance, how much of it slows the story down, and how much do readers love of that. And that's all subjective. So it's always just a game that you play and trying to figure out the right balance.
Well, it sounds like you managed to walk that tightrope and found that balance.
Yeah, I hope so. I hope so.
Now, your main character, what is the one, she doesn't want her daughter to grow up with a father in prison like she. How did you manage to work that bit of backstory in? Was it hard to bring out that little bit of backstory that we may not have known?
No. And the reason I say no is because I tend to do that a lot in all my books. Like I told you with my first book, the main character goes to Glacier and feels haunted by it because he has this backstory of, you know, camping and going through this harrowing event of his father being mauled by a grizzly bear. And so I'm quite used to bringing in backstory in terms of developing character. And yeah, you're right. But it's a great question that you have, because you don't want to just jerk your reader out of the current story and, oh, now we're back, you know, 30 years ago. And on the other hand, you want to be I like to be introspective about it. I'm a fairly introspective writer. And so I think, again, that's subjective. Some people don't like that. Some people love it. And so for my fan base, I really like to just trust and have confidence that they're going to be okay going with me on that ride and dive a little deeper if I need to in a character and maybe explain some of those things about their backstory. But again, that's fine line between being too heavy-handed with it. You don't want to do that, but you do want to give it. And there's a quote from Michael Connelly who had said at one point that the best detective novels are the ones where the case works on the detective, not the detective working on the case. And I just kind of butchered that quote. That's not exactly the way it goes, but that's the extent of it. That, you know, the best crime novels are the ones where the case is not, you know, the detective's not working on the case, but the case is working on the detective. And so I really subscribe to that. I really feel strongly that I love to put my main detectives or whoever I'm dealing with in that crime, whether they're sleuth-like or more in a police procedural kind of scenario where they're actually a detective, that they are butting up against something that brings stuff up for themselves.
That's fantastic. And that probably leads to a lot of interesting little moments and interesting little discoveries about your character that your reader wouldn't otherwise get.
Right. And if your detective is just looking constantly at, what happened on the case, what's next, going from person to person to do interviews or figure things out, and you don't start diving into some of their emotions or what's going on, it can feel too just too procedural, if that makes sense.
I was going to say too flat, too cardboardy.
Yeah. Thank you.
Oh, no problem. I'm no wordsmith, but occasionally I get the feeling.
Perfect.
Now, are you a full-time writer?
So I actually am not. I have a Pilates studio, believe it or not, that I have owned for over 10 years now. I used to teach at a community college. I actually have a master's degree in linguistics and English, and I taught for years at my local community college, English, linguistics, and some basic writing courses, some basic literature courses, things like that. And eventually I had to give that up because I was an adjunct and I just couldn't make enough money, and I was a single mom. I actually went through a divorce and had a son. And when he was about 4 is when I found myself single and just not being able to make it on that adjunct salary at the college. And so I started to do some other things. I started to do some technical writing online and for a local semiconductor company that I worked for and did some technical writing for, and that became very tedious and very monotonous. And I actually put creative writing aside for a long period of my life when I was doing that, because I just couldn't stomach going back to the computer and the keyboard when I'd been on it all day doing that kind of stuff. When I remarried, my husband said, well, you know, you do these Pilates classes and people make pretty good money doing that. why don't you do that? And so I kind of looked into it and started to get certified in Pilates, and I'm kind of a natural teacher anyway, since I'd been teaching English for so many years, even though vastly different area, of course, teaching Pilates than teaching English. But, you know, I enjoy teaching. And so I got my certifications, higher and higher levels of that, to the point where I could teach Pilates on actual equipment. I don't know how many of your listeners know what Pilates is, but it's kind of a exercise routine. It's different than yoga, but sort of like that. But it also involves equipment. And I opened a studio that has this equipment in it and was able to kind of do privates with people and small group classes and things like that, and charge a lot more than I would have made, say, teaching like at a health club or something like that. And so I have done that for over 10 years now. And I just recently sold my studio because the writing was becoming I just was not having enough time to do it all. You know, between running the small business and doing the writing. And when I remarried, we combined families. And so I have two stepdaughters. And things just got crazy for a while with all of that and a couple pets. And, you know, and so I was just really tucking writing in around the edges. And that got to the point where it was like, okay, after my third book, it was like, it's time to make a change. So I actually sold my Pilates studio, but I still work there. And that was part of the deal when I sold it, that I would still teach clients there and work there, but that I just wouldn't be running the small business anymore. And that's freed up my time a little bit, but I still teach. And so I can't say I'm full-time writer, but I can't say that I won't be eventually either. I've kind of been making some changes so that there's more time for writing. And I'm getting a little better at trying to figure out how to have a writing schedule, but I've never had that. I've always, like I said, tucked it around the edges. And so now I'm trying to teach myself how to be more disciplined and like have a writing schedule. And that's a challenge for me. It's been a huge challenge for me, but I feel like I'll be a better writer and more productive if I can do that.
That's outstanding. And that's interesting about the Pilates. So do you ever write Pilates or exercise or anything like that, or some little fact about it, into your manuscript?
I haven't, but I should. And you know, the thing about that I've always felt is so interesting about the Pilates is that, like I said, I put creative writing aside for probably over 10 years. I had dabbled with it a little bit when I was teaching English at the college, and dabbled with trying to write some non-genre type novels, and I really never did anything with them. But then the divorce happened, and my life kind of went into crisis mode and just survival mode, and you know, single mom mode, and so, like I said, I put the whole creative writing thing aside and said, well, this just isn't going to happen for me. So let me focus. Let me just focus on getting my life together and raising my child. And so when I did that and did all the technical writing, I felt too burnt out from being at the computer to kind of, you know, I was working late at night when my little boy was in bed on these technical documents, and there just was no room for creative writing. And not, that's not to say technical writing can't be creative. I don't mean to slam technical writers in any way. I take my hat off. It just, for me, it was just, you know, it's very different from what I do as a novelist. And so when I was able to get into Pilates and make a living that way and put the technical writing aside, it really freed me up creatively to go back to writing in that way, in that creative way. And, you know, it gave me, you know, no pun intended, flexibility to do that. And so I really am thankful for the Pilates that I was able to find my way back to creative writing by doing such a healthy endeavor like that.
And it sounds like you've taken some of your experiences as a single mom and written them into your manuscript.
Yes, definitely. Not in all my books, but definitely in this last one. And little bit, I think I can see that playing out a little bit in future books as well.
That's cool. It's great that you're able to take some of your real life experiences and real life endeavors and sneak them into your books, sometimes in a big way and sometimes in a small way.
I think a lot of us writers do that, I think, but I definitely do.
I've run into more than one writer that does it, so I'm going to say you're right.
Yeah, me too.
I mean, come on. How could you write without bringing some of you into the books? It wouldn't be your book.
Exactly. It just has to have that. And even though, like I said, I'll research things that I have no experience with and try and just imagine it, you have to still put parts of you into it in order to gain some verisimilitude and, you know, and to make it feel like it's realistic.
What?
And sincere and authentic.
Exactly. Because if it's not sincere, I have a feeling the readers are going to go, nah, never mind. But
exactly.
Since you're on your fourth one, it sounds like you've got a pretty good fan base. What was the one thing your fan feedback has given you that you might want to bring into a future novel?
Well, I left one thing kind of hanging in my first book, not really intentionally, but I mean, it wasn't a main like storyline for me. Like I played out the main storyline and I did not leave that hanging, but there was an element with the person who ended up committing the crime and being arrested where I think people really wanted to know what happened to that person, like what happened to their trial even, or what, you know, for me to, you know, kind of like the girl with the dragon tattoo who, where you follow along and you go through like all the legal stuff with her as well. And that's just not what I was doing. And I mean, and so I felt like once the person was caught, I certainly didn't need to continue on. But I have definitely gotten a few fan emails saying, can you go back to that person? Can we follow that person? And so I thought that was interesting. And not necessarily that I need to write an entire story about that person, but even just drop a paragraph in a future books about what happened. But the problem with that is that if I do that and somebody picks up, like let's say somebody reads A Sharp Solitude before they, just my new book, and because they all work as standalones. So if somebody reads A Sharp Solitude and I've dropped a paragraph in about, you know, maybe one of the side characters says something about whatever ended up happening to that person from the first book that, you know, got convicted of such and such, then I ruin it for that person to go back and read that first book if they want to. I've just given them, you know, I've given them the killer. So I feel like I can't do that, but I have gotten, it's been interesting to me to get that feedback that people are that curious about these people that you develop in your stories. And that's why we all love to read. And if an author does it well, people feel real and they feel like you're in their lives. You're part of their life and you're experiencing it. And so you do get a little attached and you want to find out like what happens. And so it's a reminder when I get those kinds of emails and feedback, how important it is to really take the reader seriously with what you're, you know, what they're going to spend their time with reading and getting invested in. Does that make sense?
That makes a lot of sense, because I've often heard it said, you can make more money, you can buy another book, but you can't make more time, so that's the most valuable thing. And readers are giving you their time and their money to go on this ride with.
Exactly. Yeah. And I so appreciate that. I'm so appreciative of that. So I take the comments. That's a great question you asked, because I do take the comments I get very seriously and really think through them and want to honor them.
How do you pick which one of the characters that we may have brushed up against in a previous novel? How do you pick which one to explore this time?
Sometimes it strikes me when writing them as a side character that, ooh, I kind of connect to this character. I like this character, or I don't like this character. And sometimes that's fun too, to explore a character that you don't like that much, because maybe there's a reason you don't like them. And maybe that reason is that it's bringing something up in yourself that you need to dig deeper in. Or sometimes it's just, they really speak to you and you write them really freely and their voice comes really easily to you. And so it's a good feeling when that kind of crops up, even if they're just like a side, like, so for example, I write mostly in first person narrative. So if I have a side character, of course, I'm not in their head, but you can still get a sense, even if you're not in their head, that their dialogue and whatnot, things that they say are coming very easy to you, or that you're really connecting with that. And so if that happens, I'll keep that in mind and pluck that character out. If that doesn't happen, then I just kind of think who might work, who am I interested in, and just kind of wing it from there. And then sometimes I get myself into trouble because I'll go, I really have a new idea and a new concept that I want to explore, but the only way it'll work is if I have not said too much about that side character in a previous book, because if there's too much information that I've dropped and then it doesn't work with my new plot, I can't use them, even though I really love them. And so that I hate that when that happens, but that just actually happened to me because I'm starting to work on a fifth book now, and I wanted to pluck a character from my fourth book, but I got all the kind of a few things worked out in my head that I wanted to explore. But then I went back and checked, what all did I say about the side character? And it's like, no, it just doesn't fit. It's just the fit just isn't there, because the history that I've dropped about them no longer works with the history that I've got in mind for that character for the new book. So then I have to figure something else out.
I think that's great. Now, what advice would you give to the new writer who's just sitting there at their keyboard, or they're listening to this podcast and they've always wanted to write a book? What advice would you give them?
Oh, a couple things. One is just do it. The Nike thing, right? Just do it. Just start and, make time, whatever time you can. Like I said, I fitted around the edges. It was not pretty. It might be late at night. It might be just a couple hours on the weekend, even if I didn't write all week. And I mean, there's all sorts of advice for writers about, if you're going to be a writer, you have to take it very seriously and be professional about it. A professional golfer golfs every day. So if you're a professional writer, you should write every day. And although I it's not that I disagree with that, but I think there's more ways than one to skin a cat. And I think that if you can just do it by only writing weekends, that's fine. Nobody should tell you that that doesn't work, that, that all you have is weekends. And so you write during the weekends, or all you have are, maybe every third night you write, or every other night you write. But, it's just because you don't write every day doesn't mean you're not professional, or that you're not good enough to do this and make it happen. And so that's my first thing, is just do it in whatever way it works for you. My second thought is, be stubborn about it, be bullheaded about it, because, if you want this thing, then just get it. Don't let anybody deter you. Don't let anybody bring you down about it, and just go for it, and just be bullheaded. And, with that said though, you do want to listen to your mentors. You do want to listen to advice. You don't want to be so bullheaded that you don't cut that scene that somebody's telling you to cut, or you don't make that description shorter that somebody's saying is going on too long. I mean, you want to listen. But you want to take advice in, but you also want to, follow your gut and it's like going on a journey, and you're going to get in, let's say you're going to get in that car, and you're going to go somewhere, and you're going to make that happen no matter what, and you're going to get there. And that's kind of like, so you're going to take maybe the advice in, but you're going to get there. And that's what you have to be bullheaded about. And then the third piece of advice is to read a lot of read different genres, but mostly read the genre that you're trying to write in, and really just learn as much as you can about that, and absorb as much as you can about the music of that language, and just the way it's done. And even if you're not paying attention to it, it will sink in. Even if you're just going for the ride, enjoying the story, and not thinking about like how the author is crafting something, those tones of storytelling will sink in, and it'll make it easier for you when you do sit down to write.
Things like the pace and things like that often tend to sink in.
Exactly. Exactly.
In fact, I've heard people say, don't write what you know, write what you read, because you know the type of characters you like, you know the pacing.
What works for you. Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Well, we have reached the time to take that wonderful commercial break. So I'm going to pour you a cup of coffee, and we will see all of you on the other side.
Most writers and radio show hosts know that to connect with your fans, you need to do more than just write books or record the latest podcasts. There are many different elements that go into forming an online platform, but there are also many hidden traps. To make matters worse, solid advice on how to survive the muddy waters is scarce. In the book Hidden Traps, I talk about some of the important issues of working with an online platform, highlighting traps that could put your physical or internet security at risk, or be harmful to your reputation. Are your social media posts just links with a few disjointed words making you look like someone who can't complete a sentence? Did your new website cost you more than you anticipated? Are you leaking your personal contact details across the web without even knowing it? Then you need Hidden Traps. Hidden Traps is now available in paperback and ebook from a variety of retailers, including Amazon, Barnes & Noble, and Kobo. Visit blackwolfpublications.com for more details.
If you're 85 or younger, would you like peace of mind and comfort for your family? We're Final Expense Direct with an urgent message for you. The average funeral today costs over $8,000, but the most you'll get from government benefits is $255. How will your family pay the difference? We can help. Our senior plans start as low as just a dollar a day and pay up to $30,000 for a funeral and other final expenses. Peace of mind is easy. There's no medical exam. You'll have lifetime coverage, and your plan can't be canceled as long as you pay your premiums. Call now for free information about our senior plans. Answer a few simple questions and receive approval right on the phone. Plus, call right now, and we'll give you a discount prescription card for free. Call 800-553-8687. That's 800-553-8687. Again, 800-553-8687.
KLRN Radio has advertising rates available. We have rates to fit almost any budget. Contact us at advertising@klrnradio.com.
Everyone loves liberty. Our rights come from God, not the government. So why are you letting other people tell you what's best for your health care? Exercise your freedom with Liberty HealthShare. Liberty HealthShare is a community of people who voluntarily share one another's medical costs. Liberty HealthShare is founded on the idea that most people truly want to help one another. Healthcare sharing allows members to do just that as a true community that supports one another in times of need. Liberty believes people should make decisions for themselves and their families. Members are able to take back the freedom to make their own decisions about their health care, freedom from guilt or doubt about how your money is used. You have the freedom to direct your health care, not to be dictated to by bureaucrats. Stop letting others tell you what to do and join a community of like-minded people. Exercise your freedom. Join Liberty HealthShare and take back the control of your health care while helping those around you. Call Liberty at 855-58-LIBERTY. Again, that's 855-58-LIBERTY for more information, or you can check them out at libertyhealthshare.org. Again, that's libertyhealthshare.org.
Sometimes writers feel lost, unsure why a passage may not be working. It takes another set of eyes to help us nurture our writing into full maturity. At Black Wolf Editorial Services, we strive to enable writers to develop and grow, offering manuscript critiques and line edits through a mentoring editorial style. We also offer assistance on generating a writer's bio for your websites. Black Wolf Editorial Services, nurturing your writing into maturity. For a full list of services, visit blackwolfeditorial.com.
Thank y'all for hanging in there with us while we paid those radio station bills. I'm going to pour myself a fresh cup of coffee. Now, Christine, speaking of coffee, I always like to ask my authors, what is your favorite coffee shop treat?
Oh, well, us writers, we are fond of coffee shops because sometimes that's where we kind of tuck the writing in, is wherever we can, even in an airport, sitting in a coffee shop. So I like Americanos with cream, lots of room for cream. And then I like a cinnamon crumb kind of thing, a cinnamon crumb coffee cake, you know, I just love that cinnamon when it gets crumpled on top of something, some kind of, coffee cake or pound or muffin or something like that. But I also am a chocolate lover. So any kind of croissant or pastry that has chocolate in it is also one of my favorites. So yeah, the cinnamon crumb coffee cake or the chocolate croissant.
Sounds delicious. I always love finding out what that treat is, because everybody's got a different one.
Really? Yeah. Yeah. I mean, of course, just like everybody's got different tastes and what they like to read.
Exactly. And it's just one of those crazy little questions I think is just fun to ask. So back to your story, Allie Page, what was the one thing about her that came out while you were writing this character that just surprised you?
Wow, that's a good question. I think she's a very tenacious kind of character. I think I was mentioning the word be bullheaded earlier about, you know, about your writing, and she's kind of a bullheaded character. And she, you know, when she gets her mind on something that she's going to do something, she really can't let it go very easily. And I think I was surprised that that really resonated with me personally. Like I really felt like a connection to her that way. And when I wrote her in the third book, there were parts of her, I think, that kind of came across as obnoxious maybe a little bit. And I don't think of myself as an obnoxious person, but I think I'm a little bullheaded. And when I was writing her, it surprised me how much I could kind of relate to that kind of that sense of being bullheaded, and maybe, you know, kind of like when a dog wants to grip a bone and won't let go kind of thing. And sometimes I think you have to let go. And so I think I played with that a little bit with her, like that feeling of sometimes you can go too hard at something and you can't be that tenacious about it. There are times, appropriate times for it, but there are appropriate times when you have to let go as well and take a step back.
Now, Allie has a child. I can't remember if it was son or daughter.
Girl, daughter.
Okay, so Allie's daughter. Do we get to meet her a fair bit or not too often?
We do. I developed some of her home life, and that was kind of new for me. I think that's the first time that I, in a book, have developed more on the personal side, you know, what's going on really at home. My other books have been more what's going on out in the field with the investigation and all that. And so I delved into that a little bit more. I mean, not excessively, but like I said, I kind of wanted to bring out a little bit of that domestic suspense in terms of how does that work when it butts up against the wild and somebody who's already in the profession of being an investigator, and how does that all play out? And so I wanted her in her home life, and especially since she's coming up against issues that have to deal with her ex. So
what was your favorite little scene with Allie's daughter? What was your favorite one that just made you absolutely grin and smile?
I have this small scene where she goes up to, you know, stairs to kind of tuck her, you know, to get her to go to bed. And I just kind of remember those feelings of, you know, when my boy was small, of, you know, getting just all the things that happen with a child when they're maybe like in play mode or their own imaginary world, and they're kind of looking off into the distance. And then you kind of snap them back to your world with maybe your questions. And then they get to talking, and, you know, at the age of four or five, six, they just talk like nonstop. And it's just, it's so amazing when, you have a child that just chatters on and on and on and on. And you're like, what is this? Like, as a mom, if you've never had kids before, when you start to see that, it's just amazing. It's like a part of you is like, okay, you want to cut it off, because it's like, that's not okay. You're not supposed to talk that much, and I've got things to do, and I want to get you to bed, and I don't want you to keep talking. And, but it's also like, you understand when you're a mom, even if this is your first child and you've never had a teenager before, you understand that there's something about that that's so precious and special that you don't want that to end, because you know there will come a time when they're a teenager and they will not be doing that, and they will be in their own private world, and they will not be telling you just everything, blow by blow, detail of their entire day and everything that their teacher said and everything that everybody around them said, and just giving information like that. And so I have the scene where the daughter kind of starts to do that and just kind of go through that a little bit, and what the mom is feeling, what Allie's feeling, and then how she kind of gets that wrapped up and gets her little girl to bed, and how that feels. And it just kind of, their interaction really just brought a smile to my face.
That's neat. That really is. And I think it's great to be able to explore a little bit of parenting issues in a book like this, because it just kind of, it doesn't come out of the blue because we know the daughter's there, but it's just one of those, it's a little tiny slice of life moment that makes you connect with the character.
Exactly. Exactly. And I mean, just sort of similar to like, what's your favorite coffee treat, right? You know, it's like that. Like when you give your character, what is their favorite coffee treat, or what's their favorite coffee drink? Or, you know, that it just makes you know the character just that much more. So their interaction with their families or a loved one are super important to character development.
You've mentioned you had to do some research and call on, you know, retired FBI agents and local law enforcement. How did you come in contact with these people? How did you develop these resources so that you had them to call on?
Well, it wasn't easy in the beginning because I'm sort of shy and, like I said, no background or anything. So you feel like very like, well, I want to write a mystery. I want to write crime fiction. And, cause that's what I like to read, and I want to write this, but I know nothing about law enforcement other than what I've read in books. And that just doesn't seem right to try and dive in without understanding it. So from there, it's just like talking to friends, like, who do you know? Who knows somebody who knows a cop, or who knows somebody who knows, you know? And so I asked a friend, and I was lucky. He knew the former chief of police of my town. This was, you know, maybe 5 years ago, 5 or 6 years ago, when I was getting started in the whole kind of crime fiction writing genre world. And, he said, you know, I'll mention to him about you and see if he'd be up to talking to you. And of course I was kind of embarrassed, because it's like, you know, at that stage, when you haven't even written your first book and you haven't gotten published, you don't feel legitimized. You don't feel like, oh, can I really take this person to coffee and ask them about their job and just say, I'm going to write a book. And, you know, you can just see the eye rolls, like, yeah, right, you're going to write a book. Like, everybody's going to write a book. But, so you feel silly, I guess, but you just have to get past that. And I did, and I took him to coffee, and the thing is, everybody's so helpful. And that's what you come to learn, is there's no reason to be shy and scared to reach out and ask people, because people really love to educate people and talk about what they do, and, you know, within reason and without, you know, I mean, they're not being unprofessional or anything. They have to be very professional about it, and they tell you that, but they're really great. And the chief of police that I took to, coffee just really laid it out. This is what you do. This is the way an investigation starts. This is the way it proceeds. This is how it works up in the wild, you know, in a place like Glacier Park. This is how the different law enforcement factions work together. This is who handles, you know, forensics. This is who, and so he just kind of laid it out for me, which was super helpful. I took copious notes and went from there. And then in my second book, I ended up interviewing a head ranger, a lead ranger in Glacier Park, who'd been there a long time and who just knew everything about the place. And he helped quite a bit more with that. And then in my third book, I think I used both of them and a couple other cops that I'd gotten to know in the meantime. And then I think I mentioned earlier in my fourth book that there was an FBI agent who is ex-agent now, but lives in Portland. And and we spent some time on the phone, and he just kind of answered all my questions. And then there's research, you know, and then you go to writers conferences and, or, you know, writer fan based conferences, you know, like BoucherCon or Left Coast Crime or some of those conferences, and you meet other authors. And a lot of times those other authors, lo and behold, are former cops, former SWAT team, former FBI, former, you know, and so you get to meet them too. And they're really great to talk to because they're also writers and they really understand the process, and they'll give you their card and call me, you know, you'll say, oh, I have a character who's this. And, but I, you know, I have no background in law enforcement. Can you help me? And they're like, absolutely. Give me a call if you need anything. And so that's just kind of, it just gets easier and easier because of that. Once you kind of get immersed in the world of writing and you start to meet more and more people who are grappling with the same things you are.
That's great. That's neat advice. Neat advice. And in interesting, just in general, I always wondered how writers get these little bits of information that are real that they put in their novels. So
that's partly it for sure. I think what we write down during a phone call with somebody who has, you know, interesting information about the real work that they do or have done in the past.
Now, it sounds like you've been to Glacier National Park more than once.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it's, I like to think of it as my backyard, and I love it there, and I've spent a lot of time there hiking many, many, many miles. And I've just loved it for a long time, and so I have a lot of fun setting my books in and around the area. I mean, it's not just Glacier, it's kind of the whole Northwest, you know, all the different lands that are around where I live. I explore those as well in my books, and you know, and just the communities and the tenaciousness that comes in communities that live in kind of rugged areas like I live in. And but there's also poverty where I live. And so, you know, right outside of Glacier, there's actually quite a bit of drug use and meth production and different things like that. And, you know, and the heroin epidemic, the opioid epidemic is definitely in rural Montana. And Montana, by and large, is rural. The whole thing is kind of rural. I mean, we have cities, obviously, but they're not huge cities. I think the population of Montana is less than 1 million people. And so it's interesting to explore like the communities and crime within those communities, because we actually do have quite a bit of crime, even though we're not a New York City or a LA or, you know, some big, huge city. It's just because small town America anymore, I think, is grappling with these issues that, you know, joblessness and poverty brings. And yet at the same time, we've got communities that are kind of Aspen Vale like, where people with lots of money come in and build, you know, huge second homes that are, you know, like mansions or, you know, little mini mansions. And those are not very far from the trailer park down the road. And so you have all these interesting dynamics between really wealthy people who come in and want to do the mountain thing and take advantage of all that Montana has to offer as far as its beauty versus the, you know, the people that are just really trying to scrape by and, you know, timber companies that have closed or mining companies that have closed and not much work. And how do you make your living off of just the tourism? And so just lots of interesting dynamics to explore.
I was going to say, what's your favorite place in Glacier National Park to visit? I'm sure you have one that you just, yeah, I want to go sit there. I like to hike in this trail. I'm sure there's one.
Okay, so there's this great trail in Glacier Park. It's called Sai. It's a pass. It's a trail that goes over the pass. And it's called Sai Pass, S-I-Y. E-H, I believe, S-I-Y-E-H, Sai-E Pass. And it's, if you are ever in Glacier and feel like that kind of a hike, I think it's about 9-10 miles. So it's a bit of a hike, but it's gorgeous. It goes through this area called the Sun Rift Gorge. And it's just a beautiful hike. And it's one of my favorite. You can do it in a day, you know, you don't have to camp overnight to do it. And you get really high up. So you see great views, and then and you see a glacier, even though it's quickly fading and disappearing. The glaciers in Glacier Park are disappearing, and but you get to see a bit of one of those, and you get to come down through the Sun Rift Gorge, and it's really awesome.
Sounds absolutely beautiful. So have you written that particular spot into your book yet?
No, I have not. I think I might have made mention to it. Maybe like some other hikers were going to go do it. Maybe. Actually, I don't actually think I did. So I might do that, though. Thanks for the tip. Thanks for the idea.
Sounds like Fido likes it, too.
Can you hear that? Yeah. He's getting excited, too.
Hey, we encourage input from all species on this show. What can I say?
Well, and he clearly wants to have his input. And I hope it doesn't go on too much longer.
I was going to say, do you want me to pause it for a minute while you go investigate?
That would be great. Thank you. I'll hurry.
Now, we've talked a lot about settings and character development and Allie Page and her daughter. What would Allie's favorite coffee shop treat be?
Oh, I think Allie would be a black coffee kind of gal. And I think she would like a cinnamon roll.
Awesome.
That's what I think. Yeah.
Awesome.
Just a good old cinnamon roll.
Oh, they're delicious too.
Yeah. Yeah. She's not a chocolate person, which is, I am, but I made her not a chocolate person. So I can't say she'd like the same treats that I would like.
Well, that's why it's called fiction.
That is.
What has been your favorite adventure in writing? What has been the one thing when you were just writing it that you were just laughing and grinning and, oh my gosh, and the words were just flowing like water out of the tap? What's been your favorite adventure in writing?
I think a bar fight kind of thing has been my favorite thing. It's just so much fun to do like a bar scene, a good bar scene. It's like you got to think even of like some of the producers of Star Wars and stuff when they did that famous bar scene. Like you have to just think that makes them grin. And I think it's the same for me with writing is like a good bar scene just makes you grin. And I have one of those in my second book, a kind of a bar fight thing that I don't know if it makes other people grin, but it kind of feels that way when I'm writing it. But that's not the effect I intend to have on the reader. I don't expect them to be grinning. I expect them to be maybe sweating it out a little bit. But for me, it's just a lot of fun to write.
Outstanding. Now, is there anything you wanted to bring up that I haven't mentioned?
Oh gosh. No, you're awesome. Thanks. I don't think that there's anything in particular. I think I've covered a lot.
Well, I've got one last question for you. Please give the listeners your social media contact information.
Oh, sure. So, I'm on Twitter, Christine_Carbo, and Christine is with a C, Christine _Carbo, Carbo. And then Facebook is Christine Carbo Author, and Instagram is Christine.Carbo. And love followers on all of those venues. So, yeah, come follow me. And I don't post a ton, so I won't inundate you, but I do like to connect.
All right. Now, for those of you wanting to track me down, you can find me on Twitter at Radio Host Jesse. And of course, don't forget to check out jessiescoffeeshop.com. And just as a reminder, Jessie's Coffee Shop is available on iTunes, iHeartRadio, Stitcher, Spreaker, Google Play Music, and many of your favorite podcast locations. We have come to my favorite part of the show. I am going to pour myself a fresh cup of coffee, snatch this copy of A Sharp Solitude off the table, and settle down with a great book. And I will see you next time in the coffee shop.